podcasts. A growing number of Americans listen to them and even produce them. Are you on the bandwagon? There are all kinds of podcasts out there, more than 500,000 by one count. They can be about everything from politics to health, history to parenting, comedy, self-help, entrepreneurship, and more. And their listener base is growing. Nielsen estimates that podcast listening was up 11% from 2016 to 2017. And those numbers are from before the explosion of smart speakers during last year's holiday season. So, are you a podcast listener? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we will discuss what makes a podcast worthwhile, who's listening to them, how you can produce one, and will it make you rich? For those of you who have yet to try one, we will explain how easy it is to take a listen. Tune in to podcasts. Maine Calling is next, but first this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. A few years ago, a podcast about a young man in Maryland prison became the first blockbuster podcast. Serial introduced many listeners to the world of podcasts and podcasting. But just what is a podcast? And if you've never listened to one, how difficult is it to get started? Today, we are going to be discussing this not-quite-so-new audio format. Joining me in our studio, Diane Atwood, who is the creator of the website and blog Catching Health and a former health reporter on WCSH6. And Fred Greenhalgh is a producer and writer of audio drama, a solar evangelist, goat herder, and off-grid yurt dweller. His newest audio drama is The Mayan Crystal. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you listen to podcasts? If so, which are your favorites? If you're not, what's holding you back? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome back to both of you. Hello. Nice to see friendly faces in the studio here. Fred, I'm going to start with you. Mm-hmm. What got you started into the podcast world?
Well, it's as a storyteller. Ever since I was a kid, concocting knight and fantasy and dragon stories, went to film school, and film turned me on to radio because of how much work it is to take a sort of a long form idea and convert it into a film. So I was sort of, when I got back to Maine, so, I'm not going out to Hollywood, but I want to do storytelling. And someone sort of turned me on to those old time radio dramas. I heard like what NPR did with Star Wars, which is something I kind of actually did remember. Oh yeah, when I was a kid, I had those on records. And then said, well, why isn't anyone doing this today? And that sort of started me on taking, written fiction stories and converting them into radio dramas, rounding up actors in the local area at USM where I went to school and turning them into plays. And then it's like, well, now what do I do with this? I got to put it on the internet. And I got into it the end of the early days of podcasting. And now, 12 years have flown by.
The end of the early days of podcasting. So we're doing this Maine Calling program at the beginning of the second chapter. Or maybe the third chapter.
You're at the moment where it's gone from like YouTube, which is like just crazy anarchy, to where you're starting to see like media companies enter into it and like actual real money, a lot of like even venture capital funding networks, like some really... You have this mix of like people like me who are completely independent and Diane who just are doing it because we love it, mixed with like some serious entertainment power entering the marketplace, which is fun and crazy all at the same time.
Okay, Diane, how does one go from television to podcasts?
It's natural. It's just natural. No, I always wanted to be a freelance writer, and so I started a blog and quickly realized I could still be a reporter, but I could be my own boss. And as a reporter, as a blogger, I'm constantly interviewing people, writing their stories, and it just made sense that some of the people I interviewed begged longer audio interviews. And so I just jumped in. I didn't exactly jump in. I procrastinated for at least 18 months. I wasn't sure how to do it. But when I did it, I wondered, why didn't I do that sooner?
So how long have you been doing podcasts now, and how many have you done? Have you kept count?
I've done about 40. I've been doing it a little over a year.
And what have you learned in that time? Are there certain podcasts that have just kind of taken off in popularity that leave you scratching your head? Or have you learned from those 40 sort of what sticks and what doesn't? Or?
Well, it's funny. I had a conversation with a man about he listens to the podcast, and I expected that he enjoyed the podcast that I've done on subjects like procrastination or spiritualism or all of that. His favorite one was one I did with Dr. Cindy Asbjornsen about veins, about the health of your veins. And I was like, what? Why did you like that one? And he said, because I learned something. I had no idea how the circulatory system worked.
Oh, so go figure.
You never know.
So I have to ask you each, Fred, do you listen to podcasts? I mean, it sounds like you're pretty busy. Do you have time to actually listen to others? And if so, what are your favorites?
I listen to a whole lot of stuff. Like what you were just saying, Diane, really resonated with me, because I think that's what a lot of people love about podcasts is they are on, a well-done podcast. You will learn something that you didn't really quite expect about the world. And just, some deep dives on some really weird topics can be really interesting. Like there's everything from the fall of Rome to, re-examining the Civil War from new perspectives now. There's great, history podcasts. There are, there's a lot of the greater public radio ecosystem has, hugely interesting podcasts. There's almost politics podcasts to a fault. So you maybe sometimes want to not wade too deeply in there. And then what I do with audio drama, I also follow I think there's a community of us who, I would say numbered in the dozens when I started. Now there's something like 2,000 people in this Facebook group.
So what's the difference between a podcast and, a learning program? I know somebody, for example, who for years back before the internet would get tapes from the library and take great lessons on his commute from work. What's the difference between that and a podcast?
Yeah, I mean, podcasts are really just a form of on-demand audio. So it happens to be a particular distribution format that is sort of open source that you can get. So there's podcast apps. There's a particular, a podcast really just refers to the way that you get it, but the content itself is just content. It's just audio. And so what is interesting is you have established radio shows convert to podcasts. It's more or less the same radio show, but as a podcast. But you also see things that are created online first, which don't necessarily have to conform to any sort of runtime or any sort of format that that radio program might exist. And there are sort of you mentioned Serial in your lead up. Like Serial, I think, was kind of one of the first that really defined that a podcast wasn't radio but could be something else. It wasn't wasn't This American Life, and it really wasn't like anything anyone had ever heard before. So I don't think it's useful to think of podcasts as some sort of techie object. They're just on-demand audio on any number of topics.
Diane, what are your favorites to listen to?
Oh, Hidden Brain is my all-time favorite.
I love him, yeah.
I just love him. When I hear his voice, I stop everything. And I discovered a new one recently called The Endless Thread. And
I'm writing this down.
Okay. They narrate these jaw-dropping stories that they find on Reddit. And the one I listened to the other day was about a plane that is up in the air, thousands of feet up in the air, and the windshield blew out.
Oh.
And everyone survived. So you stop everything. So it was entertaining. It was mind-boggling. But I love podcasts in which I learn something. So I'm the nonfiction person. Mm.
So we're going to check in with Jane Lindholm, who's on the line with us now. She is the host of Vermont Public Radio's Vermont Edition, also the host and creator of the podcast But Why?, a podcast for curious kids. Hi, Jane. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I'm such a pleasure to be here, and I'm writing them down, too, so I can get some new ideas.
So tell us about your podcast. How did you get the idea? When did you start it? How did it happen?
We actually just turned 2 on April 1st, which is an inauspicious day to start, but we had this idea. I had this idea that I wanted to have a podcast. I knew that was where so many ears were going, and it seemed like the kids' marketplace at the time was really, there was kind of a vacuum for really good kids' podcasts and for something that was sort of like All Things Considered or Morning Edition for kids, that if you had a 4-year-old in the back seat and you didn't want that 4-year-old to be hearing about certain things in the news that might not be appropriate for 4-year-old ears, you could turn to a podcast. And But Why seemed like a great way to do it, where kids get to ask the questions. So kids send us questions from all over the world. We've had questions from kids in, I think now, 47 states and 35 different countries. And they send us all kinds of questions, and my co-producer, Melody Baudette, and I go out and find answers. I love it. It's so much fun to make.
And you've taped a couple here in Maine, I understand.
Yes. Most of my family lives in Maine, so I use that to my advantage. And we did a whole episode about the sea and why it's salty, and about alewives and other kinds of different creatures that live in the tide pools around Maine. And then I went up to Deer Isle and did a story about how coffee is made and why adults find this gross liquid so tasty with one of the women who runs 44 North Coffee. It was really fun. You know, and that's the benefit of making a podcast, is you get to follow your curiosity. And I love being led by the young people who listen, but then really getting to dive into questions that are as varied as how do pigs poop and why do flamingos stand on one leg, to what does it feel like to die and how are babies made. So it's really, it runs the gamut for me, and that's the pleasure.
Do you have a favorite podcast to listen to?
I listen to a ton of them. I actually shouldn't admit this, but I listen to most podcasts on double speed so that I can get more in. But one of my favorites is Two Dope Queens from WNYC Studios. I also listen to Nancy out of WNYC Studios. One of the other kids' podcasts I love comes from another public radio station, WBUR. It's called Circle Round, and they get great actors and actresses that you'd know from TV to interpret and act in these folktales from around the world. And then I have guilty pleasures as well. I listen to Dear Sugars. I listen to one called Ladies We Need to Talk from the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. How to Be a Girl. I have too many. I could go on for... do you want me to be your whole guest, Jennifer?
So what I want to know, Jane, is when you have the time to listen to all of these, because I know that you are, like so many of us, a working parent.
Yeah, it's tricky. First of all, double speed helps if you can stand it. And I try to go out for a run at least a couple times a week, and that's a really key podcast listening time for me.
Okay.
And then in the commute, once daycare has, you know, the drop-off has happened, I try to listen to a few.
That's when I listen to NPR.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and this is probably something you'll get into, but in some ways, podcast listening has replaced public radio listening in a lot of ways, and so a lot of stations like ours are trying to capture that part of the population as well with on-demand shows.
So before we let you go, we want you to tell us about the upcoming mega awesome, super huge, wicked fun podcast play date that you're involved with.
This is going to be so much fun. It's in Boston, so many of your listeners could make it. It's the last weekend in April. WBUR is hosting 6 kids podcasters, and we're all doing live shows at the Coolidge Corner Theater. And But Why is doing one focused on birds and owls. And so we'll be talking about owl communication, and we'll be getting our 4- and 5-year-old audience members to make their own owl calls and flap their wings like owls. And there are still lots of tickets available for some of the shows, so I encourage everybody to come out and see it live.
Well, Jane, thanks so much for calling in. Jane Lindholm, the host of Vermont Public Radio's Vermont Edition, also the host and creator of the podcast But Why, a podcast for curious kids. Jane mentioned that she listens while she's running and while she's in the car. What's interesting to me, though, is I read some statistics this morning that more people listen to podcasts in their home than any other place. Is that where you listen, Fred?
I wash dishes, or vacuuming, doing that sort of thing, cooking dinner. Absolutely.
What about you, Diane?
Whenever I should be working.
There's that.
So it's a good procrastination tool.
Yes. You know, it's interesting. I have heard Jane's podcast, and I've recommended it to my daughter. I have a granddaughter who's just not quite 2. They live in Vermont, and they're aware of the podcast, and they can't wait for her to be old enough to be able to tune it in for her.
Well, both of you produce your own podcasts, and, you know, Diane, you have a background in broadcasting, but you were a reporter. You weren't the person holding the camera. You weren't usually the person editing the tape. Fred, you did go to film school, and you did learn these technical skills. So I'm going to start with you, Diane. How hard is it to learn how to put a podcast together if you don't have a technical background?
It was much easier than I thought it would be. I did a lot of research. There's this guy, John Lee Dumas, who has all kinds of information.
Maine native there.
Yes, that's right. He's a Maine native. I happened to be married to somebody who has a video production business, and so he helped me. Bought a mixer, set me up with a microphone. I use Skype. That's how I communicate with people. I downloaded a program that records the audio. And it really is simple. It's daunting to think about it, but when you break it down, it's very, very simple. So we record the interview, and I ship it off to my husband, and he edits any little mistakes there happen to be, usually mine.
Okay. And if somebody doesn't have a husband who can edit mistakes, is that something that you feel like a regular person could learn if they had to?
I think they could if you keep it simple. When I do my interviews, they're about a half hour long. I do them as if they were live interviews. So I minimize any editing that needs to be done.
Okay. What about you, Fred? How hard is what you do?
Well, I've chosen the most absolutely difficult way to do it possibly. But those of us who do it, love it, and share our knowledge. And there's a couple online Facebook groups dedicated where we just everything, you know, complete newbies to people who've been doing it for the BBC for 30 years contribute to like, hey, I'm got $100 to spend on a studio. What do I do? And it's like, yeah, I get a bunch of PVC pipes and some foam from, you know, U-Haul and cover it with moving blankets. And now you've got yourself a booth and now you can bring some actors into it. I do want to mention just what when Jane touched on the kids podcast, I do want to sort of flag that because that is a super cool new area. The kids programming in podcasts didn't really, that's sort of a new phenomenon. As she said 2 years ago, didn't really exist. Now, you know, I'm 35. My generation is having kids who are now like five and up and who can listen to audio programming. And that's where there's a lot of cool stuff happening. That's sort of how I ended up making the Mayan Crystal, my latest show. You know, on everything, I learned something new. So I had learned, you know, I as a sort of Stephen King junkie, my early stuff was very much in the sci-fi horror vein. And then learning how to make a kid's show was a different challenge. I already learned how to, you know, record actors well and add sound effects and music, but then telling a story that has some spooky moments, but is like would not totally be inappropriate for children was a learning curve. So, yeah,
so is this Diane? Is this how a good way to make a living?
I make a living, but not just from podcasting. Some people do. I have a website that has my blog and my podcast. And there's something up there at least three times a week, something new. And I have sponsors. And that's how I earn my living.
What about you, Fred?
Yes.
Not to get too personal, but
you have to pick, like I said, I do think the most sort of resource-intensive way of doing it. And, you know, a lot of the podcast models that work are simpler formats where it's one host, a replicable format. It's a lot of the reasons that radio drama became hard to have over the air radio is that you could have two disc jockeys talking for a lot less money than to make a fully fledged radio play. So, but that being said, you know, there has been an audience for my work. It supports itself at this point, and I've had some interesting phone calls. There's like Hollywood is now starting to actually look at what's happening in audio podcasting and seeing what I'm doing as sort of a almost like a JV league for Hollywood adaptations. And that's done some kind of weird things where you have these experiments with people with like bunches of money who can just do things that independents can't do. But we're sort of like literally competing in the same place that like, you know, a well-funded thing with Lawrence Fishburne might be. So
So with 500,000 podcasts out there right now, that's the estimate, right? How many of those people are actually able to make a living? And how many people is this sort of a hobby?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably like writing, right? Like I remember like when I was in college, it's something like 10% of all writers are, you know, full-time paid writers. And that's of published writers, right? So it's not the bulk of it, but it can be done, and it depends on what your primary passion is. And there's some people whose primary passion is to make a living doing it, and there's other people who have a topic and will sort of make the, you know, retrofit the business model to fit what they want to do.
Well, guess what? We're already late for our first break, so we're going to take that. When we come back, your comments and questions about podcasting. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Maine Humanities Council, connecting through shared experiences with book groups for veterans this spring. Learn more at mainehumanities.org.
Facebook now says as many as 87 million users had their data compromised. What's Facebook's responsibility?
We didn't take a broad enough view of what our responsibility is. And that was a huge mistake. It was my mistake.
Mark Zuckerberg testifies before Congress today at issue social media privacy and the use and abuse of data. It's special coverage from NPR News.
This afternoon from 2 to 4 here on Maine Public Radio. Until their conclusion on mainepublic.org.
An invasive insect that could kill all of Maine's ash trees and tear up the roots of tribal culture is right at our state's door. Maine is working hard to keep the emerald ash borer at bay, but entomologists say it's only a matter of time before the battle is lost. Maine Public has a special in-depth online report where you can learn more about what's at stake for Maine, including the state's four Wabanaki tribes. Visit mainepublic.org and click on the homepage link, The Scourge at Maine's Door, or search for Emerald Ash.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, podcasts and podcasting. Joining me today, Diane Atwood. She's creator of the website and podcast Catching Health. She's a former health reporter on WCSH 6 and an old friend. Fred Greenhalgh is a producer and writer of audio drama. His newest creation is The Mayan Crystal. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us now, Marty Grohman. He's a businessman, a state rep from Biddeford, and the creator of the podcast, The Grow Maine Show. Marty, welcome back to Maine Calling.
Hey, Jennifer. Hi, Fred. Hi, Diane, fellow podcasters.
Hello.
Hello.
Tell us about The Grow Maine Show.
So I've been doing it about 5 years, about 80 episodes. And what I do is celebrate Maine entrepreneurs. I started a company in Maine and had a lot of success, but there's this kind of perception that Maine is bad for business. So my sort of basic question is, if Maine is so horrible for business, why are you so successful? And then we just sort of build on that theme from there.
Who have you found is your audience?
It's a lot of people in the startup community. I just had Maddie Purcell from Feud on, and I think it's really ignited a lot of interest in her business. And then my current guest is actually Sean Sullivan, the executive director of the Maine Brewers Guild. So he talks a lot about Maine's craft brewing industry and how kind of critical it is to the growth of Maine's economy.
Okay, Marty, what are some of your favorite other podcasts?
You know, as a business person, entrepreneur, this one's kind of off the board for a thousand, but I really love this one called Manager Tools, which I've been listening to since when you had to download it on your MP3 player. And it kind of talks about, it's quick episodes on the best way to manage your business, believe it or not.
Well, thanks so much for joining us today. That's Marty Grohman. He has a podcast, The Grow Maine Show. And we're going to go to one more. We're going to be joined by Ben Sprague, the mayor of Bangor and creator of the podcast, The Maine Show. Hi, Ben. Welcome to Maine Calling.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for having me on today.
Of course. Tell us about your podcast and its intended audience.
Well, I have a weekly show, more or less, where I do one-on-one interviews with people around the state of Maine, and it's a pretty broad topic. We've had politicians on, athletes, business leaders, and then just some sort of diamond-in-the-rough stories of so-called ordinary Mainers that are actually doing some pretty interesting and inspiring things. So it's been a lot of fun to do, and I really enjoy the podcast genre. It's been a good way to help tell some of these stories.
How do you do it? Do you produce it yourself? Do you have someone who puts it together for you?
I do produce it myself. With the way technology is these days, my recording equipment is pretty mobile. I just record right into a program on my laptop and do the editing right on there as well, and certainly a little bit of a learning curve with it, but now at this point, it goes relatively smoothly, and the audio quality, I think, is fairly good, and like I said, it's just a great way to help share some of these stories of people around our state that are doing some cool things.
Okay, before we let you go, we have to ask you what your favorites are to listen to.
Well, you just had Marty Grohman on there. I enjoy his podcast, telling some Maine stories as well. Radiolab is one of my favorite podcasts, and there's a pretty good Runner's World podcast and some exercising podcasts that are out there. That's one of the good things about the genre. You can take it to the gym, you can take it on a run or an exercise, a walk. It's really very mobile. So those are some of my favorites.
Well, Ben, thanks so much for joining us today. Ben Sprague, the mayor of Bangor and creator of the podcast, The Maine Show. We'll go to John calling from Freeport. Hi, John. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thank you for the show. It's very interesting. Some of the ones that I like for myself is in the morning, Up First, I think is a great one. It gives you kind of a start of the day of what's going on. And, of course, the Maine shows, you know, This Day in Maine, Maine Considered, and, of course, Maine Calling. But there's another one that I really enjoy, which used to be broadcast on the radio, was what they was called Car Talk, which is no longer, you know, radio on the radio. It used to be on the news in the afternoons. But there is now a podcast, and that's new every Saturday, which is nice to listen to. And so you can get Car Talk as a podcast. Also, Washington Week and Meet the Press. I'm kind of a news junkie, so I like to listen to those.
Sounds like it. Thanks so much for calling, John. And John giving the examples that it's really depends what you're into. Very personalized, your podcast list.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it's tough, you know, when there's only 24 hours in a day and a radio station can only fit 24 hours podcasts, as you know, with 500,000 of them. You know, you'd have to have 100 million stations.
You could just sit around and listen all day long, get nothing done, but you learn a lot.
We'll go to Mal from Damariscotta. Hi, Mal. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. How are you? This
great.
Is a great program.
Thank you.
I just want to let your listeners know that Skedanfa Library down in Damariscotta, we have a online podcasting service that we provide to our patrons. We have over 100 podcasts so far. We've started it slowly a couple of years ago, but we've been building up, and we offer a little of everything. We've got music, including, you know, old-time rock and roll. We have jazz. We have interviews with people of all different kinds of backgrounds. None of them are terribly long. They're about 10, 15 minutes, except for, well, the music ones tend to run about an hour.
So, Mal, tell me how this works. Does someone have to come into the library to do the downloading of the podcast, or can they do it from home?
You can do it from home online. If you just search for Skedanfa Podcasts, you'll find us. Or it's we refer people to podomatic.com, which is where we keep our stuff. But I guess any podcast system can find us. Any app for that. But
so, Mal, how is it different, what the library offers differ from what somebody can just download onto their smartphone without using the library?
Well, you can download and listen to this on your phone if you wanted to. There's an app for it. Podomatic has an app. And then you can just go through our menu of selections. And it's pretty straightforward.
Okay, well, thanks so much for calling in and telling us about your program at the Skedanfa Library in Damariscotta. We have an email question from Mary Frances. I don't understand how anyone makes money off of podcasting. Fred, how does it work? How does the whole sort of industry work,
if it
is an industry?
Right. So, you know, Diane said she had sponsors. That's a popular choice. She also mentioned John Lee Dumas. I'm pretty sure that's his model. That's been my model as well. A lot of those are, so basically free, like TV, right? It's free programming, but sponsors pay for the attention span of the people who listen to the show. There's also a kind of a cool subset of this, though, is the Patreon. Patreon is a service that allows a podcaster to sort of allows them to set up a subscription-based service. So you can say, if you donate $5 to my show, you get access to bonus shows. We'll send you a sticker or whatever. But you can, you know, there's people who make, you know, tens of thousands of dollars a month off of like $5 at a time subscriptions. So, you know, most people probably make small amounts of money doing that, but some people have built businesses on it. There's sort of a direct patronship model. There is a sponsorship model. And then, of course, like with NPR, it's more like a mission driven model where the podcast or say for a lot of authors. So, you know, if something else is funding the audio programming, but you're actually, you know, you have a mission to either, you know, if you're an author, to sell copies of a book, if you're NPR, the point is to just build your overall listener base or whatever. You also don't necessarily need to monetize the actual show itself.
A lot of podcasters will do that. they'll open their podcast with, you know, welcome to the podcast, it's sponsored by, and then they'll read a 15 or 30 second message. And then they'll break up their podcast in the middle, maybe again at the end. I've chosen not to do that. I've chosen not to go out and look for individual podcast sponsors. I have major sponsors for the blog and for my website, the catchinghealth.com website, which is the blog and the podcast.
So do you like it better than television reporting, Diane?
Do we like being our own boss? Yes. Do we like being able to wear our pajamas sometimes when you can't? No, I really do try to get dressed every morning.
I'm not going to push you on that.
Oh, okay. I love it. I just wanted to say I love what I'm doing.
An email from Rhett. I'm a Rockland-based freelance journalist who covers fisheries at the intersection of science and sustainability for publications such as Discovery, Manga Bay, Nat Geo, etc. Last autumn, I launched Beyond Data, a podcast that allows me to explore some stories I've not felt 100% comfortable covering as a more traditional science writer, often because of a lack of data. One reviewer said the show is investigative journalism meets science and the perfect anecdote for the alternative facts. Each show is around an hour in length with many voices, scientists, regulators, legislators, authors, fishers, conservationists, academics, etc., contributing to each episode. I'm reporting and producing the show by myself, so the first season is just 8 episodes. I think that's impressive. Eight episodes of what sounds like radio documentaries that are pretty in-depth. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of work, Rhett. Thanks for calling in. And let's see here. Krista on Facebook writes, are you one of the few Latin Americans living in Maine or simply interested in Latin America? Check out the podcast of NPR's Radio Ambulante. Their website has tons of information in English as well. I recommend starting with the podcast that takes place in Maine. You smiled, Fred. You know
this?
Oh, no.
I was just reading that they are, the people behind Radio Ambulante are trying to really push for this because it is... English is very dominant in the podcasting sphere, but that's obviously, you know, part of the global population is only a small percentage of it. So I think this is, if you ever think that sort of podcasts are a fad, we're actually really just at the very, very beginning. And I don't know, I learned, so with my radio drama work, I learn a lot of interesting things. Like there's a, you know, Puerto Rican radio drama scene. There's a lot of interesting stuff in continental Europe. Apparently, there's quite a scene in Brazil in radio drama. So I get all these programs that I wish I spoke the language so I could actually understand it. But, you know, it's a big world out there. And that's what's kind of fun is to have these programs that, you know, as much as I'm a very loyal Maine public listener and love the radio, but what podcasts really offer is access to, you know, I don't know, we got really into Minnesota Public Radio did an in-depth thing on Philando Castile called 74 Seconds. And that was, you know, very, it just felt like very, very local, concentrated journalism on a particular topic. It didn't feel like NPR was covering it. It felt like that local station was doing it. And it's the kind of show that, without podcasts, probably wouldn't have gotten outside of Minnesota, but because of podcasts, we can hear it. And so all of us get these, you know, we're not stuck in Maine. We can be everywhere.
Do you know that there are even podcast conferences where podcasters from all over the world can gather and meet each other?
Have you gone to one?
No, I haven't, but I belong to some Facebook groups that are wonderful. She Podcasts for female podcasters has been a godsend.
You know, it's interesting, Diane, that you bring up she podcasters because the statistics that I've been poring over this morning show that more men listen to podcasts than women. It's sort of like 44% women, 56% men, if you look at it that way. And then also that 21% of American women have listened to a podcast, but 28% of men. You're looking at me. You haven't heard those stats. Does that surprise you?
It doesn't surprise me, but I wonder how many women versus men listen to actually create their own podcasts.
And what about you, Fred? Any theories on why the numbers are what they are?
I mean, maybe it's a technology thing, but I think it will course correct as a greater percentage of the overall population listens to it. And though that may be true on the sort of the macro level, there's also some, you know, super, you know, voices that are not necessarily represented on mainstream media get their place in podcasts. So there are a lot of women creators, a lot of people of color creators talking about stuff that you know, makes contemporary white culture a little uncomfortable, and they can be in a space that's comfortable for them, and people can meet them where they are instead of having to conform with mainstream society. And if that's the thing that excites you, you know, check out like Code Switch and some of the stuff that WNYC is doing, because they've got some good stuff that's can be difficult to hear but really opens your imagination.
Well, if you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Before we take a quick break, a word about tomorrow's program. We are going to be talking about pet care. We have our favorite veterinarians back. Share your comments or questions. Our email address, again, talk@mainepublic.org. You can send us a tweet or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Kennebec Behavioral Health, promoting a community which everyone enjoys physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual health. And North Yarmouth Academy, now offering summer camps for children ages 2 to 14, including circus camp. More at nya.org. Maine Public Radio is planning to provide live coverage of Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg's testimony on Capitol Hill this afternoon from NPR News. The Senate Committee and the Judiciary and Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee will convene a hearing titled Facebook, Social Media Privacy, and the Use and Abuse of Data. Our coverage on both radio and online at mainepublic.org will get underway at 2 o'clock this afternoon. Please note we will leave the radio coverage at 4 o'clock for All Things Considered, but live coverage will continue online at mainepublic.org. Live coverage of Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg's testimony to Congress this afternoon in just a little bit at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
How much control do we have over our data online?
I like to think that I have a little bit more control than what people are saying.
I don't think we have much control at all.
And where should we draw the line?
Birthdays and family things, photographs, that's a line.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly, Americans and Privacy, as Mark Zuckerberg faces Congress this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon from 4 to 6:30. Here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, podcasts and podcasting. Joining me in our studio, Diane Atwood, creator of the website blog Catching Health, who's also a former health reporter on WCSH6, and Fred Greenhalgh, who's a producer and writer of audio drama, a solar evangelist, a goat herder, and an off-grid yurt dweller. His newest audio drama is The Mayan Crystal. And Fred, do you sleep?
I do.
Okay. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Erwin calling from Portland. Hi, Erwin. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I'm an older person. And like I said, I can remember when we didn't have computers. And so I'm wondering, what does it take? How can you tune into podcasts? Do you need a large computer, or what do you need?
Good question.
Do you have a smartphone?
No. But you do need a smartphone, right?
No, you can listen to it on your computer. I mean, do you have a website, Diane?
I do. You can listen on your computer, an iPad, or laptop. I direct people right to my website, which is DianeAtwood.com, and there's a tab right there that connects to my podcasts. So I try to make it as easy as possible.
Yeah, and Erwin, something I would suggest, we had a call from the Skidamfa Library in Damariscotta, but I know that libraries all over the state really focus on helping people connect with technology. They completely understand that it's complicated and not the easiest thing for everybody. And the Maine State Library has something called a petting zoo. It takes all different devices to different libraries to help their librarians and other people learn how to use things. So also what I'll tell you and I'll tell our audience is that our producer, Jonathan Smith, just put a post on our Facebook page. It's Diane Rehm explaining how to listen to podcasts. So there's all sorts of support out there. I always jokingly say find a teenager, but you don't really need a teenager if you've got a library.
Yeah, well, and I know, Diane, we were talking about which apps we personally use. So the Apple actually has, if you have any modern Apple device, you have a podcast app on your phone. If you have Android, it's a little bit more complicated. But the two apps, I'll give the plug for NPR One, which is awesome. And you have to go on and say you're part of Maine Public, but then it'll start streaming stuff. But then it has a mode where you can go in and find other shows. And I think just about every podcast is now part of the NPR One if you dig into it. And there's I'm also really excited about what Radio Public is doing. So I think they're part of PRX, which is a nonprofit that operates in the public radio space. And Radio Public also has sort of its own, you log in and then you can just type in a show. So like my show, Maya and Crystal, anywhere where once you have a thing where you can download podcasts, just type in the name of the show and you'll find the show and then, get to
sure.
It.
So Erwin, if Erwin has a laptop computer, some sort of tablet, some sort of smartphone, some sort of smart speaker, a desktop computer with high-speed internet, any of those things probably can find podcasts.
Right. And if he's interested in a specific one or category, he can just Google. Mm-hmm. And there's tons of information.
If he Googled Diane Atwood podcast, it would come up.
Yes, because I did it this morning to check.
Yeah. Well, and I do like the category. So I also, radio drama revival, which is so you type in radio drama podcast and like a lot of what I do with the, like the old time radio days, but modern stuff. And if you just type in radio drama podcast, you find it that way. So, it's totally easy for a computer.
Sure. And we have a note from Jonathan Smith, our producer. Not only is this video where Diane Rehm explains how to listen to a podcast on our Facebook page, it is also on the Maine Calling webpage. So Erwin and anyone else out there who wants to stick their big toe into podcasting, that might be a really terrific place to start. And of course, we all miss Diane Rehm on the air. So a chance to see her. We have a tweet from Mackenzie. Myths and legends is the best. So there we go. An email from Jen. If you have not already mentioned the Radiotopia Podcast Collective, please give them a shout out. They have so many fantastic shows, including 99% Invisible, which is about design, The Illusionist, about language, The Memory Palace. Hard to explain this one, but listening to it feels like buying a dresser at a flea market and finding a drawer full of old letters inside. I also love a lot of Gimlet Media podcasts. Reply All, Startup, etc., Radio Lab, Two Dope Queens, and of course, the Public Radio Podcast. What I love about this email from Jen is one of the things I read this morning is that something like a quarter of people are listening to podcasts these days, but those people who do listen to 7 or 8 a week, and I think Jen is one of those.
Yeah, totally. And she missed, on the Radiotopia Network, I meant to have them in my list to mention too. The Truth, which is Jonathan Mitchell, does basically what I do in the format of like they feel like short films, but for sound, is also a killer show. And I was also going to mention Tuman Bay, TUMANBAY, which is sort of like Game of Thrones in audio, and it's just excellent.
Okay, we'll go to Jamie calling from Portland. Hi, Jamie. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I have a question. I know when people do web pages and whatnot, they've got to be careful with maybe licensing pictures or content, and I just didn't know from the production of your efforts, are there legal concerns? Do you and then if I can put a plug in, my favorite podcast is Science Friday. It was great to hear Fred Bever was on Science Friday last week, talking about northern right whales. So that's my favorite, but I'll take your answer off the air.
Well, I can tell you that for my blog, I use lots of pictures. Every blog post that I do has at least one picture, and I try to either take my own pictures or get an image from the person I interviewed. If I cannot get pictures that way, I always make sure that I have purchased a picture or I have gotten it from a free source, a public domain, because you can get into big trouble if you use a picture without a license. As far as the podcasts, I usually just use one picture. I do a write-up on my blog, an introduction to the podcast, and I will use a picture of the person I interviewed. So that's not a problem.
Do you use music?
I do have music, which I got from my husband, and it's licensed.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's basically the thing is I mean, I've even when I was totally broke, finding music and finding, you know, basically if you create your own original stuff, it's not subject to these copyright things, and you can license stuff. Like, yes, you cannot download a Metallica track and put it in the back of your podcast. You'll get in trouble, and you shouldn't do that. But what I've always has found fun is that Maine does have all these awesome creative people. When I knew no one, I think I put like a Craigslist ad, said, hey, I'll give you like $25 if you write a theme for my podcast. And sure enough, someone appeared from, you know, the Portland creative community to do that. So it's also like not all that hard to get, you know, a lot of people like creating stuff. Like that's what really makes people go with podcasting, is that it's a way to create something that goes out in the universe that people respond to. So it's if you're passionate about doing it, you know, a lot of people will come and find you and be part of it.
And it's wonderful to be able to collaborate with people. And one of the things that I enjoy most about having built a blog and built a podcast is being able to sit down with people, share your knowledge with them, find out from them. It's just a wonderful way to connect with people offline.
We have a tweet from Matt. Check out Where Should We Begin podcast. You can listen to real couples in a counseling session. Very wow. Personal, emotional, and real. A true guilty pleasure and must listen. How interesting.
I heard about that one and decided I didn't know if I wanted to listen.
Yeah. An email from Marty. Since Maine Calling is available as a podcast, why is it on the radio again in the evenings? And even though I'm not Charles Beck and I don't decide when to put the programs on, I'm going to guess it's because people listen. If people weren't listening, we wouldn't be putting it on again in the evening. An email. How does someone new to podcasts find podcasts? Fred, you were talking about this before. Go to the podcast app that's probably preloaded onto your computer.
Yeah, no, it is. And I mean, it's true that will be all the top things are going to be dominated with the top programs. So you're not going to find some of these ones that are a little off the beaten path. But I mean, that's why it's so fun, because if you start digging into it, I mean, basically most people hear about new podcasts from other podcasts. So you may have to spend a little bit of time to find the podcasts you like. But then when you find ones you like, you'll find people who like podcasts like yours, and you'll find way more.
They're easier to find than you realize.
Yeah.
Everybody's talking about podcasts these days.
A tweet from Bill. To the best of our knowledge is one of the absolutely best podcasts I follow from Wisconsin Public Radio. Mm-hmm. Hidden Brain's Tunnel Vision and Filthy Rich have been life-changing. I also listen while exercising. Okay. So multitasking there. We've got Robert calling from Gorham. Hi, Robert. Go ahead.
Thank you very much for taking the call. The app I use is called Stitcher, mm-hmm. which automatically downloads whatever apps I select so that I don't have to go searching for them. And the favorite podcasts would be such as Only a Game, produced by WBOR in Boston with Bill Littlefield. Also Freakonomics Radio, 538 Politics, and All Songs Considered.
So when you say Stitcher is an aggregator, Robert, what does that mean? Do you put in your interests and it recommends some podcasts?
Correct. You basically download the app and then follow the prompts, and it can take you to all sorts of different genres and shows, and you line them up and you can order them. I used to start my day before Garrison Keillor was bounced off the air with the Writer's Almanac, and then proceed down to a bunch of news-related shows. And Freakonomics and others that are longer are great for long car trips.
One thing that you just reminded me of is that if you're going to produce a podcast, you need to have a place for your podcast to live. You need a host for your podcast. Like the files would be way too big for me to let all those podcasts live on my blog, for instance. So I happen to choose a host called SoundCloud. Mm-hmm. And so every podcast that I do is uploaded to SoundCloud, and then I am given a feed URL. And so I take that feed URL and I send it to Stitcher, to iTunes, to Google Play, to a whole bunch of platforms,
yeah.
And so that people can access them in all of those places. I prefer to have people go to DianeAtwood.com and see them on my blog. That's my model. But you could go to Stitcher and all of these other platforms.
You can go to Stitcher and find you.
Yeah.
Just write. You just type in Catching Health with Diane Atwood, and She may not be top 10, but she could be here in Maine.
Robert, thank you so much for calling and telling us about that. And Diana, as you're telling me all of this, I have to say that it's sort of blowing my mind a little bit.
Why?
It's so much to learn.
You know, we should always be learning, right? Yeah. I happen to be of retirement age, and I never want to stop learning. So this is the perfect way. Learning the new technology, learning something new every time I interview somebody, it's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, and the internet is full of resources on this. And I don't know, I've done a number of like talks at libraries and stuff in Maine. So if anyone out there is like, gosh, I would like to learn more, you know, I'll show up for free because I love sharing this love with people. But that being said, you can totally go out on your own, start Googling around, and all this stuff is out there. Like it's a learning curve, but there's also, because so many people are sort of DIY enthusiasts, there's a lot of like them sharing their knowledge for the next person. So it's the resources out there are also tremendous once you get out in the search the internet.
So yeah. All the people out there who have a creative idea, is there anything, Fred and Diane, I'm going to ask you in your opinion, where there's among these 500,000 podcasts, are there still needs? Is there something you've looked for and haven't found and wish somebody would do?
I would like to see some kind of an organization and association here in Maine. I had no idea there were so many other podcasters here in Maine. So I would love to be able to somehow connect with them.
Yeah, I sort of agree with that. And I don't think, like when you said, Diane, like love to learn something, I think I feel the same way. So, you know, there's sort of no shortage of topics, like, or two ways of going about it. One is just pick a weird, curious, eccentric topic no one has ever talked about and just go for it. And something you might otherwise turn into a novel could be a great podcast. And also like investigative journalism, like where, you know, you could do a deep dive on Maine's opiate crisis. And that could be a really interesting, mini series podcast. I mean, yeah, it's sort of like every book out there has been written. So you shouldn't write a book would be a silly thing to say. So if you have a passionate idea and it feels like, part of the reason I converted from like writing fiction to audio was also because of like, well, what am I going to do with a short story? It might get published in some obscure magazine. If I convert it to an audio, at least then someone may hear it if I put it on the radio, and then the radio became the internet. So it's just a good way to get something out there.
Thank you both. Are you staying quickly?
Well, I was going to say a quick plug. It's not an entire series, but next month I'll be interviewing Dr. Mark Publicker about who's an addiction specialist here in Maine about Narcan. So
great.
Tune in next month.
And you're going to be able to find links to Diane and Fred's podcasts on our web page, on our Facebook page, and all sorts of other resources there as well. Thank you, both of you. Diane Atwood, the creator of the website and podcast Catching Health, and Fred Greenhalge, producer and writer of audio drama. His newest creation is The Mayan Crystal. Sandra Harris ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. For those of you who are musically inclined, our contest to come up with a new theme song for Maine Calling ends this Friday. We have a lot of excellent entries. If you haven't sent yours in, Friday's your deadline. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.